Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. Our topic, U.S. policy toward Africa. President Barack Obama will host the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, D.C. in early August. The historic summit, the first of its kind, will bring leaders across the African continent to the nation's capital to focus on investing in the next generation. We'll talk with Secretary Thomas Greenfield about expectations for this summit, as well as discuss a number of ongoing crises on the continent and U.S. policy in general. Prior to Secretary Thomas Greenfield's appointment as Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, she served in a variety of distinguished diplomatic roles. She has been Director General of the U.S. Foreign Service, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of African Affairs, and Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. She also served as U.S. Ambassador to Liberia and has been posted in Nigeria, The Gambia, Kenya, Jamaica, Pakistan, and Switzerland. In the year 2000, Ambassador Thomas Greenfield received the Warren Christopher Award for Outstanding Achievement in Global Affairs and recognition of her work with refugees. She has also been the recipient of numerous superior, meritorious, and performance awards, including the Presidential Meritorious Service Award. However, throughout her distinguished career, she has always had a special passion for Africa, and of course, that is the topic of our program. Secretary Thomas Greenfield, welcome to Press Conference USA.
Good. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
We're very excited, and we've also solicited a number of questions from our audience, many of whom, of course, are in Africa. So we'll sprinkle those in. Okay. But first, I'd like to ask you about the upcoming U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. What are the purpose and goals of this important summit?
As you know, the president last year announced that we would be hosting an Africa Leaders Summit this summer, and we have moved forward on that agenda. The summit will take place between August 4 through 6. And as you noted, this is the first ever U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit to take place. It will be an opportunity for us to strengthen our already strong ties with Africa and to also recognize the dynamic partnership that we have with the continent. As we start preparations for the conference on the 4th, when we hope most of the leaders will be here, we will be hosting 5 signature events. The topic of these events will be civil society, combating wildlife trafficking, global health, women and resilience, climate change, and food security. On the second day of the summit, August 5th, we will host a CEO forum for African leaders, where we will have 200 or more African CEOs and American CEOs to engage with African leaders, to talk about investment opportunities in Africa, and also to encourage more investments by American companies on the continent of Africa. We hope that this is a transactional event where leaders will leave and CEOs will leave with some ideas of how they might move forward in a proactive way on investment in the continent. And then August 6th, that's the day of the actual Leaders Summit. President Obama and Secretary Kerry will be welcoming 51 leaders from the continent, 50 African countries, and the chairman of the AU as the 51st will spend a day at the State Department with the president. Based on the priorities that were conveyed to us by African leaders during months of consultation, we will have 3 sessions. The first, investing in the future. We will be covering trade, investment, and development in this session. The second, we will be looking very broadly at peace and security, peace and regional stability. And then third, governing for the next generation. And each of these sessions, we hope to be a dialogue. We're not expecting leaders to come with long statements, but we're hoping that it is a proactive dialogue where leaders and the president are engaged with each other and come away with a clear understanding of what the priorities are for African leaders, as well as how we might partner with them to reach those priorities.
I was going to ask you who's attending, but you said 50, so the question is then who isn't attending?
Yes. We are inviting those countries that are in good standing with the United States and those that are in good standing with the African Union. So countries that have been suspended from the African Union for various reasons will not be invited. And then the three countries that are not in good standing with the United States for various reasons, Sudan, Eritrea, and Zimbabwe, have not been invited.
I would like to know if you have some concrete expectations from this important dialogue. Are there certain economic issues that the leaders will be discussing, for example?
In fact, the economic issues are very, very high on the agenda. But I think basically what we want to see coming out of this summit is to build on progress that we've made in our very long historical relationship with the continent of Africa. We want to see where we can better partner with each other to achieve mutual goals that are in all of our national interests. We want to look at how we can better coordinate and cooperate on dealing with terrorism and extremism that is on the continent with Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, AQIM, as well as other issues. We want to see how we can partner better with the continent to address these issues in a more holistic way. We want to help African countries better address issues of conflict, and there are a number of countries where we're dealing with current conflicts. And we hope that leaders leave the conference with a better understanding of what U.S. priorities are and how those priorities can be used to meet African needs.
Now, of course, you mentioned Boko Haram, AQIM, Al-Shabaab, these terrorist organizations, and we'll talk a little bit more about them as we go forward. But do you expect the leaders to reach any agreements, specific agreements on combating militancy and terrorism on the continent?
I don't want to project what will come out of the conference, because what will come out of the conference will happen during the conference. But I think it is our hope that these discussions will lead to some concrete commitments on our part, as well as other governments' parts, to address some of these difficult issues. And those commitments, we will look forward to moving forward in our agenda in the coming years on the continent.
Secretary Thomas Greenfield, before we get into some of the major challenges on the continent for the United States, I'd like you to also discuss the Young African Leaders Initiative, known as YALI, because I believe that's an important component of the conference and the fact that also the theme is investing in the next generation.
Yes.
Talk about that program and how it's progressing and what you hope to achieve this year.
You notice that brought a smile to my face. And the reason is this is such an amazing program. We currently have 500 young people from across the continent of Africa. These 500 were selected from among more than 49,000 completed applications. It's quite impressive. There were about 80,000 started applications. So the needs of youth are tremendous on the continent. And our hope is with these 500, and they're just a small drop in the bucket, that they will become catalysts for galvanizing young people across the continent. They're here in a six-week program at 20 universities across the United States, where they will be taking courses and getting training in entrepreneurship, civil society, and community development, and in public service. And then they come to Washington at the end of July, where they will have their three-day summit, a town hall meeting with the president, meeting with senior leaders throughout the U.S. government to talk about what they see as their contribution to the future of the continent. So we're very excited about this. I met 25 of them who are here in Washington at Howard University. They were quite impressive. If they are a reflection of what the other 475 are like, this really is going to be an amazing conference. But the most important thing is they go back home and they become the mentors and the supporters of the 50,000 and more young people who need to be encouraged, need to be mentored, need to be supported. Africa's youth population is estimated to be 65% age 35 and under. Many of these young people are seeking jobs, want education, want to contribute to the futures of their countries, and they don't have the wherewithal to do this. Many of them are attracted to the extremist ideologies that Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab and others have been preaching across the continent. and they're not vested in the futures of their country in a way that would contribute to the country's future. So we're hoping that this small program will be a way of addressing this. It's a major priority for the president, and it's a major priority for us in the Africa Bureau.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which is from a loyal listener from Nigeria, Oletunji Wasi. And of course, he talks about this terrible threat from Boko Haram in Nigeria. He wants to know, what is the United States doing to assist Nigeria's government to totally rout the Boko Haram insurgency?
As you know, after the nearly 300 girls were kidnapped out of Chibok Village, this act galvanized the world and galvanized the international community to support Nigeria in addressing this issue. We have been working with the Nigerian government on addressing this issue for quite some time. But since the kidnapping of the girls, we have sent a multi-agency team to Nigeria to work with both the security sector but also civilians, because we see this as being multifaceted, multidimensional approach. It is not just a security approach. It's an approach that requires the government to look at the needs of the communities in the north. It's an approach that requires us addressing the needs of these girls and others who've been kidnapped by Boko Haram. When they get reintegrated into their communities, they're going to need a lot of support. So we're working across the board with the Nigerian government, but we're also working with governments in the region. Nigeria's four neighbors who have also suffered the impact of Boko Haram, particularly Cameroon, where we've had a number of kidnappings of individuals from the international community. Currently, there are 10 Chinese business people, civilians, who are being held by Boko Haram. There were missionaries in Cameroon who were held by Boko Haram and who've since been released. So we need to work in a regional way to address the issues. The French government has been involved. As you know, French President Hollande hosted heads of state from the five countries a few months ago. A few weeks ago, the British government hosted the ministers so that we can further look at how we can work together to address the threat of Boko Haram. We have put sanctions on Boko Haram, determined that it is a terrorist group, and we are working with the UN and other agencies to move forward on that designation.
Very good. Well, there's no question that a holistic approach has to be taken. And yeah. I guess the question is, to what extent is the Nigerian government receptive to these mm-hmm. suggestions that it's much more than just heavy-handed tactics, yeah. but rather greater economic development, more egalitarian for the North? And that is going to be the long-term answer, I suppose.
And that's a discussion that we've had with the Nigerian government. When I was in Nigeria back in February, President Goodluck Jonathan went to Gombe State to announce a new economic development program. I again think that the government is very much aware of this. They know that more needs to be done, and they are working to address all of these issues. But a tremendous amount of additional work is going to be required. We can't solve this for Nigeria. Nigeria has to solve this problem with the help of its friends, both in the neighboring community as well as internationally.
We'll have more questions in a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas Greenfield. And I'm your host, Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. And as always, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback on guests and topics to PCUSA@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. And here's a shout out to Emeka Okolu from Nigeria. Well, back to you, Secretary Thomas Greenfield. And let's turn briefly to South Sudan. It's an unfortunate situation. We are now commemorating this week the third anniversary of South Sudan's independence. Should be a jubilant moment. And here we are facing a civil war. We saw the country descend into conflict last December. And it seems that President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar can't seem to come together and make amends. We've had many attempts at peace agreements. How do you see the situation unfolding, and do you think there's hope? Because now we've seen so many refugees, so many deaths. When is it going to stop, and what is the United States doing?
As we celebrate South Sudan's independence, we mourn South Sudan's situation during this incredible war that has led to the deaths of thousands of people. It's led to hundreds of thousands being forced from their homes, who are either in displaced camps have crossed the border into neighboring countries and have become refugees. None of us expected 3 years ago when we were celebrating South Sudan's independence that we would be here today. And I think most South Sudanese would feel the same. We have been working very, very diligently in the region through the President's Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan, Don Booth. He has been in the region almost permanently since last December, working with the IGAD negotiators, working with the two parties and meeting with the two parties to push for a peace deal. They did finally sign a cessation of hostilities that only lasted as long as it took the ink to dry. Mm-hmm. They were immediately fighting each other again, and people continue to suffer in South Sudan. We will continue to work at the most senior levels of the U.S. government to push the two sides to come to an agreement so that the suffering of the people of South Sudan will end. This is not child's play that is taking place on this continent. Some refer to this, we're a youthful country, we're only 3 years old, give us a break. There's no break to be given as people are losing their lives. And we are supporting the efforts of IGAD being led by the Ethiopian government and the Kenyan government and the Ugandan government to find a solution to this devastating situation.
Well, let's hope that something will evolve in a peaceful way in the very near future. Let me turn briefly to two other crises on the continent. Linda, before we go into some more questions from the audience, Mali and CAR.
Yeah.
First, Mali, briefly, you talked about AQIM.
Yeah.
Talk about the status of the effort to thwart AQIM, and how do you see Mali going forward in the future? Are we seeing grievances addressed from the Tuareg population in the north? Are the two parties, you know, coming to an agreement, which would also obviously in the long run thwart terrorism? How do you see Mali today?
You know, I was at the inauguration of the president, and everybody was jubilant at the inauguration. I had just started as assistant secretary when I went out to Mali. It was one of my first trips as assistant secretary. And in the midst of the jubilation, we all knew that there was still a lot more work to be done to seal the deal for peace in Mali. And that work continues. As you know, there was fighting that started in the north again a few weeks ago. That has been stemmed, but that highlighted for us that we still have to continue to address the issues related to the grievances that northern Malians have. I think working with the French government, working with ECOWAS and the AU, we have done a pretty good job in pushing the terrorist elements out of northern Mali. We have to continue to work with the armed groups, however, to ensure that they don't align themselves with the terrorist groups again and that they come to the table. We were encouraged by the talks that are going to take place on July 15th in Algiers, and we hope that these talks and other dialogue and truth and reconciliation efforts that are taking place in Mali will lead us to a place where we can feel some confidence that Mali won't go backward again.
And how about the Central African Republic? What is the state of play there? It's a very tragic situation. The sectarian tenor that the conflict has taken on, so many attacks against the Muslim population by Christian militias, and of course, vice versa. Where do we stand today?
Yeah, we are still in a pretty critical situation in CAR. The most important goal now is to stop the fighting, stop the killing, and put security apparatus in place so that we can stabilize the country. There was an attack on a church outside of Bangui this week in which Christians were killed. There was a grenade thrown in a mosque, so it continues outside the country, and bringing the two parties together is really our most important priority right now. I have a special representative, Ambassador Stu Symington, who is currently working on this in the region. There was a contact group meeting held this week to look at how we can better support the government, support the interim president to, one, establish security, and then two, start building foundation for dialogue so that the country can move forward with elections and get back on track. This is all still a work in progress. As you know, a UN force will be moving in September. Right now, the AU is, along with the French government, providing security, but we need to redouble our efforts in that area because the killings have continued. I met with President Samba Panza last week in Malabo during the AU summit. She is committed to moving government forward, setting up a dialogue, and providing for a more inclusive interim government so that they can start moving toward peace. But again, we still remain concerned that the fighting and the killing has continued.
I'm sure it's difficult for the United States, which would like very much to promote trade and investment and do positive things, but having to really put out fires and continue with this very important angle, counterterrorism. But let me turn to an important question, a rather dramatic one from one of our loyal listeners, Emeka Okolo. He says, and I have to quote him, "As the various heads of states prepare to fly to the United States to present their holier-than-thou posture to President Obama and the government, what will be the unequivocal stand of the United States government over the unmitigating primitive looting of the people's treasury by the so-called African leaders, which have resulted in failed road networks, failed education sectors, failed health sector, failed power sector, failed agricultural sector, and endemic election rigging?"
Wow. This is a serious question, and it is an issue that will definitely come up in various parts of the conference, both in the side meetings as well as the more formal official meetings. We met recently with the AU high-level team that is looking at the impact of corruption on the continent of Africa, and one of their findings, among many findings, was that billions of dollars have been lost to the African continent because of illicit funding and because of corruption. Mm-hmm. And the AU has expressed a desire to do something about this and has raised it as a major priority for the AU. And we certainly support that. As you know, our views on corruption are very, very clear. It is something that we discuss on a regular basis with all of the African leaders where we see serious problems with corruption. We have a visa policy that will restrict those who are involved in massive corruption from getting visas to come to the United States. On the issue of elections, we have promoted free, fair, and transparent elections, and we've called them as we've seen them. And when the elections have not been free, fair, and transparent, we are one of the first voices to speak out. We're hopeful that our discussions on these issues will have an impact, but it's also important that these issues be discussed on the continent of Africa.
Absolutely.
It is imperative that the populations in these countries address these issues as well. And I just want to say that we are supportive of those discussions and encourage those discussions.
Right, on a lighter note and a very concrete one, here's a question from Ambrose Agio. He's from Benue State, and he is recalling, of course, President Barack Obama during his last visit to Africa. He talked about Power Africa. So he would like to know what the status of Power Africa is on the continent.
We get that question a lot. It's making tremendous progress on the continent and the six initiative countries we've been working in. We have been working over the past few months to set up the infrastructure there so that we can encourage investment in the power sector, but also encourage governments to make policy changes that will facilitate companies investing in the power sector. Our hope is that through Power Africa, we will double the electricity available to more than 20 million people on the continent and provide double the amount of electricity. It's going well. It's just started, so you know the progress is yet to be seen by the population, but I think we are going to see as we continue to develop some huge, huge achievements in the power area on the continent.
And as we conclude, Secretary Thomas Greenfield, I'm going to give you a chance to sort of reiterate the U.S. priorities on the continent.
Okay.
To what extent we're concentrating on this counterterrorism aspect, which of course is important, but also education, investment, and so forth. And that of course brings us to China.
Yes.
Many Africans and all of us who are interested in the continent are concerned about the so-called Chinese encroachment on the continent. They're all over the place. And that's not a bad thing necessarily.
However,
they seem to be really taking the lead, sort of overshadowing the United States to the chagrin of our African friends. What's your take on this sort of discrepancy between China's presence and that of the U.S.? And of course, then, because China is so present and not known for its advocacy of freedom of the press, or nor do they put conditions on aid. To what extent is that having perhaps an adverse impact on the continent and undercutting our efforts to promote democracy, free press, and those important values?
That's a great question, and it's a question I get asked almost every single time I do an interview. Let me start by saying it is not our intention to compete with the Chinese on the continent of Africa. Our relationship with Africa is a long historical relationship. It is one that has developed over many, many years. It is deep, and I think there is no question in the minds of Africans that the U.S. is present on the continent of Africa. We are the largest humanitarian donor on the continent of Africa. We are the largest development donor on the continent of Africa. American companies have been doing business in Africa for years, long before the Chinese. The Chinese investment on the continent of Africa can be a good thing, and it should be seen as a good thing. It is up to African countries to ensure that they get the best deals out of these investments that will promote development in their countries, that will promote growth, and will provide jobs for African people. I think as the Chinese work more and more on the continent of Africa, they will see more and more the benefits of promoting good governance, transparency, freedom of the press, and human rights, because those rights are important to their people who are operating on the continent as well. They benefit from governments that are governed well. They benefit from governments that are not corrupt. So I see the Chinese so-called encroachment on the continent of Africa as an opportunity for Africans to gain more in terms of development, more in terms of investment, more in terms of job creation, but they have to make sure that they strike the right balance.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield is U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. We are most grateful, Linda, for your having come in talking about the upcoming U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed being here, and I look forward to coming back after the summit and sharing some of the outcomes and just hearing from them what they are hearing from their populations about how the summit has impacted them.
Well, we're going to hold you to that. We look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced here in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our producer was John Walker. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.